Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I know when you hear that downbeat on Monday, you know it's Monday. And when you hear my great voice, you know it's the Savage Nation. Hitler and Mussolini have come back. Thank you, guys. Hitler and Mussolini have returned. They have new names, new faces, but they're back. Hitler has come back as Ahmadinejad of Iran, and Mussolini has returned as the blimp, the bloated frog from Venezuela. The question is, where are their Hollywood idiots? It's amazing to me that history does repeat itself. And I want to remind you that the Spanish philosopher, not to be confused with the musician Santayana, wrote, I believe in the 30s, those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it, or something along those lines. And if you don't know who Hitler and Mussolini were, you're going to be condemned to repeat your history. I know who Hitler was, and I know who Mussolini was, and it's a shock to me that their character types, their in botany, we call these monotypes or prototypes in some cases. These are types that reoccur through history. Hitler is back in the form of Ahmadinejad. Mussolini is back in the form of the bloated, calculating amphibian, thick-headed Leninista Hugo Chavez. Now, this is the Savage Nation. I don't think you understand how dangerous this is. They have oil. They hate America. They have legions of American scum who love them, who want to see this country fall. They have Hollywood idiots like Sean Penn, who lives in a great big mansion with a white picket fence, sends his children to a private school, and then when he's not at home playing daddy, he's out there playing Marxist revolutionary. So with useful idiots like Sean Penn, and I won't even mention Danny Glover because he's an impotent wreck of no power whatsoever, it's amazing to me what danger we are in. Hitler and Mussolini have returned. Where are their Hollywood idiots? On MichaelSavage.com. And for those of you Muslim watchers, a new jihad Jane, she's a Marine officer. That's correct. We all know it's a religion of peace. We all know that they all come here to work. But the illegal immigrant, says the New York Post, with Hezbollah ties who faked a marriage to get U.S. citizenship and then landed jobs as a top-level federal agent, has a former sister-in-law who pulled the same scam and is now a Marine officer. That's correct. But because of the supine nature of the U.S. government, particularly the executive branch, virtually every branch, who is tripping over, they're tripping over themselves to diversify their FBI, their CIA. They were dying to hire Muslims, and so they hired this illegal immigrant with Hezbollah ties. She got top-level clearances in the FBI and the CIA, and her sister-in-law, who pulled the same scam, is now a top-ranked, well, a Marine officer. That's America today. That's America today. So what I think we should do today is focus on some of these, or if you want to do turkey and Thanksgiving, I don't know. I'm not in the mood for that. What's the point of that? We know it's turkey, Thanksgiving, blah, blah, blah. The question most people are asking is that with the greed and corruption that is reigning at the top of the republic, can we survive much longer? When you have people raking in fortunes of the types you have today without any regard to national security, for example, the CFIUS issue, the Treasury Secretary coming from Goldman Sachs. And I have nothing against Goldman Sachs. They're a great investment bank, but they are not America. They're only a part of America. Unfortunately, I'm sure they think that what's good for Goldman Sachs is good for America. The question is that always true? I mean, when you put your mind on the bottom line, it's not always true. Not always true. In fact, many of you good liberals out there, and pay very close attention now, many of you good self-righteous fraudulent liberals have said for years that Henry Ford was a bad man, he was an anti-Semite, and part of the evidence you cite is that he used the Ford production lines, he built Ford production lines for Hitler in the 1930s, upon which Hitler built the Panzer tank. Really? Well, how then do you feel about your friends in the highest echelons of the investment world building truck factories for communist China? Or how about other suspicious deals of that nature? Where are you now that we need you, all you good liberals? Answer, you never were a liberal. You're never going to be a liberal. You've confused yourself because true liberals understand that there are issues that transcend politics, and those issues include personal safety and national security. I don't see the liberals understanding that, incidentally. So if you'd like to call me on this, don't bother. I don't think you can say anything that I haven't said. There are other articles on the Savage Nation. Mikasa Sukasa, Nancy Pelosi tries to force the Salvation Army to hire people who can't speak English. Thank you, Nancy. That's very diverse of you. Clinton Library donors list secret unless you're willing to pay. Vote in ears for ID card plan in SF. The Board of Supervisors should be arrested by the federal government. In my opinion, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors should be broken in by the proper FBI agency, and all of the supervisors who voted for ID cards for illegal aliens should be arrested and taken to a federal detention center for what they're doing to this country. But I'm talking to myself. Let us see what else. Jihadi-friendly AP photographer Bilal Hussein to be formally tried in the Iraqi justice system. Don't think all elements of government are this supine and this foolish. They're not. Israel approves release of 441 prisoners. That's what I call national suicide, not national reconciliation. But then when you have a Quisling on the order of the type Israel has in Olmert today, anything is possible. Israel today approved the release of 441 Palestinian Arab prisoners and pledged not to build any new settlements in the West Bank. But of course, it did nothing, got nothing in return. That's Israel. It's giving up its national sovereignty step by step, day by day, because Olmert is the type that led Jews into the concentration camps, in my opinion, to stay alive one more day. Olmert, if he had been, let us say, unfortunately detained by the Nazis, if he had been given a club, he would have been one of the capos who beat the other Jews into the ovens, is what I see him as. Maybe you disagree with me. I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. Many of you don't even know what's going on. Boston cops to search for guns in homes without warrants. Well, that's the difference. You don't want to hear any of this. You don't want to know that 28 million people have voted for Michael Savage to leave radio and run for political office. There's a guy on CNN named Lou Dobbs who pretends he can run for office. He wouldn't get 1% of the vote. Lou does a good copycat job of me on immigration, and I'm glad he came along and joined the party late. I would say 12 years after I was on this leading this march. And that's okay, the more the merrier, Lou. But you don't have a ghost of a chance to win, Lou. Look on michaelsavage.com, Lou Dobbs, and you'll see 28 million people have voted for me. I doubt you could get 2.8 million people to vote for you. And that's right. If I'm not for myself, who will be? So I could tell you about a dinner I put on last night. 16 to 18 of the nicest people I've met in years. But I'm not going to. It's not your business. I had a nice time. It was a core group of conservatives who will remain anonymous here in San Francisco. They're all business leaders in one way or another. Many are retired law enforcement and military with very distinguished careers, and I will respect their privacy. And frankly, I put this meeting together to save this city from the one-party system that has gripped it. I said, unless we create a viable alternative to the left, far left, communist views that we see and hear in this city is finished. Venezuela is not too far from our future, both in San Francisco and America. Unless there is a viable alternative to what we see in San Francisco and in America as a whole, this country will be Venezuela in less than 10 years. And I do not want to see socialism, which of course right now is at a 50 to 60% of this country is already socialist. Let's not fool ourselves. with entitlement programs built to a bigger level than ever under George Bush, and with increasing millions of bums who believe we owe them a living, we're not too far from Venezuela already. And whether this can be rescued is really up to you. I see the future, and the future is quite dim, frankly. So I had the little meeting last night. I brought Teddy to the restaurant. They all met the mascot of the Savage Nation. It was in a private dining room overlooking San Francisco Bay. And I got to tell you, it was a really nice thing to get this camaraderie, to see how powerful these people are and how they know what's going on. And I asked them, I said, do any of you know the publisher of the local newspaper and what's wrong with him? And one of them said, yes, he's like an adolescent bully. I said, wow, is that well put? They were quite literate. But if you think about it, most of the newspaper owners, or shall I say publishers or editors in the country, the left-wingers, are all like adolescent bullies. That's what it comes down to. But the bigger picture is the one-party system that's emerged in San Francisco and the terrible, terrible system that has evolved as a result. The corruption in this city is worse than Tammany Hall at its height. There is no populist counter-thrust because during the period of when the corrupt Tammany Hall ran New York, there was a spectrum of newspapers, which included conservative papers like the Herald Tribune. There are no conservative newspapers in most of America today. They are all far left, adolescent, bully pulpits, okay? The only alternative to the far left bully pulpits called the failing newspapers today are shows like mine, which are being targeted by Arab Muslim front groups like CAIR and illegitimates on the left. I'll be right back. Savage. It is the Savage Nation. You're welcome to step aboard for the big Thanksgiving weekend. It is my favorite holiday. I mean, that and July 4th. July 4th I don't have as much invested in. But Thanksgiving has a great meaning to me for a lot of reasons, and I'll get into it on Wednesday, not today. It's too early. I think a lot of people are already traveling on the road, you know. I don't blame them. If you can do it, do it. I could have traveled, but I didn't. I don't like traveling. I told you that. I've done all my traveling. Thank you. You could turn the train sound off. I did a lot of traveling when I was younger, and I'm traveled out. What's waiting for me there? A bad pillow, a bad mattress, a bad sheet, a bad meal, and people I never wanted to meet in the elevator. So tell me. I told you when I was younger, I met an older man who said there are only two reasons to travel when you get older. I said, what are those? He said, weddings and funerals. He could have added business. I mean, he didn't see the business reasons emerging. But by and large, there's no reason to travel. Family business is important to keep in touch with family. But besides that, what is waiting for you in a vacation destination? When you're younger, maybe. I don't know. To each his own. I've done it. I've been all over the South Pacific. I was all over Europe when I was young. I've been to Asia a few times. Tell me what I'm going to see that I haven't seen and that I can't see on the internet, or what am I going to experience in Tierra del Fuego? If you're open-minded, you can experience something walking to the corner. But if you're an average person who's closed-minded, I don't care if you go to Timbuktu, you can experience nothing. The saddest thing is, see young couples going to Africa on a safari, and it's like so canned. What do they experience in Africa? Here we are, there's an elephant. You know what I mean? Okay, good luck to you. WOR New York, Rich, you're on the Savage Nation. What's your gripe?
Okay, first of all, there's nothing that these two leaders have done that would give you the right to call them Mussolini or Adolf Hitler.
Well, let's stop right there. Just stop right there. I call Ahmadinejad the Hitler of our time because he has said he would like to wipe Israel off the planet. He also said that it wouldn't matter if he lost half the Iranian people. It would be worth it to kill all the Jews. This is exactly the rhetoric of Adolf Hitler. So if you find that acceptable dialogue, I can't help you. As far as the toad from Venezuela, he has called this country every name under the blood, under the sun. He wants to choke this country off. He wants to destroy us economically by withholding oil? You're telling me this thick-headed, calculating amphibian is your friend?
Right. So are you talking, you will not allow me to tell you the truth?
Look, Rich, you wouldn't know the truth if a psychiatrist strapped you to 16,000 volts. You're an America hater. You've called the show before. And I don't know whether it was in your mother's amniotic fluid or your father's semen, but something poisoned your cerebrum. Okay. What is it exactly? What is it that poisoned you against your country, you piece of garbage, you? You're like a piece of chewed up gum that was spit out on a subway floor. Why do you hate this country, you rat?
You cannot debate.
Why do you hate this country, you filthy rat, you? Get out of my country. Why don't you go move to Iran and see if you can get away with this kind of anti-American crap? I'm sick of you. How's that?
So you'll just talk. You can't debate.
No, you can't talk, you filthy lizard, you. You can't talk. How's that? Get off my show, you rat. You're never calling the show again. You degrade the audience just by calling. You're like a piece of gum on a subway floor to me, a chewed up piece of gum stuck underneath a gum machine. I can't stand these people anymore. I have no desire to talk to people who hate this country. I will not take it anymore. I will not take it anymore. If it was up to me, I'd make sure this didn't happen. We can't tolerate this kind of America hatred anymore. It's too late for it. It's a disease. It's a metastasis. It's spreading like a virus. And you've got to stop it. The next time you hear one of these wealthy liberals putting down America, just stop them. Look them in the eye and say, look how well you've done. Look how well you've done. Why do you hate this country so much? You're mentally sick, you. And walk out on them. WOR, New York, Adam. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael. How do you do? I was the one raised as a red diaper doper baby. How do you do? Listen, you mentioned Hitler and Mussolini. They were the evil back in the 30s. That's because that was the disguise of evil then. Today, it's liberalism and leftism. That's the new disguise of evil. It's 180.
I know, but look, I've done this for many years. There's nothing novel in what you're saying. Is there something new or interesting in what you'd like to say?
Well, I don't know.
No, that's all. I've done this. I've done it well. I've written books on it. Let's go past liberals are bad. Kind of boring. Let us talk about Hitler and Mussolini have returned. Ahmadinejad and the cold-blooded and calculating thick-headed Leninista Hugo Chavez. And I'm asking, where are their Hollywood idiots? Why is Sean Penn not being forced to apologize for catering to these scum?
Savage.
I'm going to stick on this. We've got Hitler and Mussolini. They're back. They're telling us what they want to do to us. They're slowly gaining the power and the confidence. They're trying to psychologically whack us out before we lift a finger. And nobody in our government will stand up to them because they're all organization, men and women. They're all in it for the pension and bailing out as fast as they can leave their federal job. So who's going to speak for us? Who is going to stand up to the Hitler and Mussolini of our time when we have Sean Penn, a very useful Hollywood idiot, saluting both Ahmadinejad of Iran at one time and repeatedly being a stooge for Venezuela's Mussolini. Listen to this deranged coward, Sean Penn.
If our belief is that this war should stop today, we cower as you point your fingers telling us to support our troops. Will you and the smarmy pundits in your pocket, those who bathe in the moisture of your soiled and blood-soaked underwear can take that noise and shove it.
Now, no one can make sense of the statements this man makes. He is a deranged, far-left hypocrite of the lowest order. If the man left America and joined Chavez, running a film studio, moving his wife and children, I would say, all right, the man is a true believer. He's a left winger. He's done what many communist American haters have done. They've given up their citizenship. Some moved to the Soviet Union in the 30s, to their detriment, of course. And I'd say that I have faith in the man's stability, but he's a liar and a hypocrite. And I can't stand it. It makes me sick to listen to this fraudulent man, Sean Penn. But I want to know why the American people don't call this bum out. I'd like to know why Hollywood doesn't force this man to come clean as to his madness. Now, Hugo Chavez may be bumptious and funny-looking, thick-headed Leninista, the cold-blooded and calculating amphibian that he is, but don't underestimate him. What did we actually do to incur the armored toad's wrath? I need you to read the Political Zoo, pages 68 forward, and you'll see that we actually did nothing to incur the armored toad's wrath. He uses his America hatred to stir up the masses of his own country. In other words, we are his scapegoat. And how he became president is amazing. Do you know that this paranoid kook, Chavez, was involved in a coup attempt in his own country in 1992? You don't read that in the papers. Do you know that as a career army officer, he led a group of rebels trying to evict Venezuela's legally and constitutionally elected president, Carlos Andre Perez, who happened to be friendly toward the United States? But unfortunately for this bungling bunch, they made every mistake possible, and the armored toad spent the next 5.5 years in an aquarium designed for toxic toads. And yet, in keeping with the viral madness of Central and South American politics, and with some generous assistance from Jimmy Carter and the muskrats from the Carter Center, Chavez, the U.S. hater, was elected president in 1998. What is it with the governments down there? Now, I can just imagine the questionnaire for running for office. Question: have you ever held an elected post? Answer: no. Question: do you have a history of civic involvement? Answer: no. Question: do you like the United States? Answer: no. Question: have you ever been in prison? Answer: C. Question: perfecto, when can you start? I can see it now. When Enron's Ken Lay gets out of prison, he can move to South America, change his name to Frito, take over Uruguay or Paraguay, and maybe even sell its power to California. Still, although Chavez may be a joke, his presidency is no laughing matter. This is one toxic toad with more ambition than a frog ought to have. In addition to fast friend and mentor Fidel Castro, Chavez pals around with amphibious amigos like Robert Mugabe of Zimbabwe, former Iranian President Khatami, Kim Jong mentally ill of North Korea, and of course, the Hitler of Iran. Chavez has become an active state sponsor of terrorism in South America and even hosts an Al-Qaeda training facility on the Venezuelan island of Margarita, an outward bound camp for wayward Muslim youth who want to work on their suntans and suicide bombings. You can read this all in the Political Zoo, which is actually the most underappreciated political book of the time. It's a great book. I don't care if it sells a million copies or 10 more. It's really a great book, and many of you have bought it, and I think it's worth reading. So we have many American fellow travelers who visit Hugo Chavez, who justify this man's dictatorial behavior, who support his criminal, let us say, destruction of alternative media. There are no alternative newspapers, radio stations, or television stations in Venezuela. He has destroyed them, and yet we hear nothing from the American media. Do you understand how bad things are down there? No. There's no dissent in Venezuela. And yet Sean Penn, a very useful idiot of this toxic toad, glorifies this man's dictatorship and then comes back safely to his home in Marin County, California, to his white picket fence life. It's amazing to me how they get away with it. See, there were times in America, especially times of war such as this, when men like Sean Penn would have been arrested for having consorted with the enemy. I'm sorry, that's not dissent. Going and laying in the mud with Mussolini in the 1938, 39, 40 era, laying in the mud with Hitler and glorifying Hitler, would have been seen for what it was, sedition. And anyone who went over there and came back and then we saw our boys dying, they would have been arrested for sedition or deported. But we live in different times. Don't you understand that? Don't you get it? WOR, Anthony, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hi, Michael. I have to tell you, this show for me it started out as entertainment value, driving home from work, and it's ended as a real source of, ideas for making change and making difference, when making a difference. How you treated that last caller that spit on my country, and I'm driving in my car and it gave me goosebumps. I mean, you took action.
But I'm giving you an example of how to deal with these left-wingers. You can't tolerate them anymore. We don't have time for it. They're running all over us. They're stepping on the conservatives. They're spitting on the flag. They're spitting on our troops. Why do we take it from them? Where is it written you have to put up with that?
I don't. And you
where is it written you have to tolerate that kind of and by the way, you confront any one of them right in their face, whether it's this Thanksgiving or tomorrow in a supermarket, they'll run like the little rats they are. Thanks for the call. I'm sick of appeasing dictators. I'm sick of appeasing America haters. I can't take it anymore. Tucson, Arizona. Megan, step right up. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mr. Savage. Now, you were discussing how liberalism is evil and how you were just saying that left-wingers, you know, are America haters. But really, I have to disagree with you because I myself am liberal and I'm registered in the Democratic Party. But also, I believe that America is a great country and I love it. So I'm proving you right now what I'm saying, that I love America even though I am liberal.
You love America. Okay, let's start with what you'll do to love America. Do you believe in securing our borders?
I'm sorry, you cut out on my cell phone. Can you hear that?
Don't play games with me, sweetheart. I'm not your girlfriend. I'll ask you one more time. Do you believe in securing our borders?
Yes, I do.
Do you believe in deporting illegal aliens?
I'm sorry, my cell phone keeps hearing that.
You didn't hear me. What is somebody feeding you the answers? Is somebody giving you the answers? All right, forget it. Just a child, a useful stooge of Hillary Clinton. They've got thousands of them. Thousands of these useful stooges. Who call shows like this and say they're liberal and they love America. But give them the litmus test. Give them the litmus test. Tell me about the borders. Tell me about language. Tell me about culture. Okay, when you get through those three, we can go from there. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. KNEW, San Francisco. Rick, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, this is Rick. I've called before. I'm a liberal, and let me tell you, I'm tired of appeasing these dictators like you mentioned. I believe in borders. I believe in language. I believe in America first. And we can't continue appeasing the Europeans, the Germans, the French. This country is going backwards, and it's time we've got to get our backbone.
Well, it starts with individuals like you standing up to your relatives this Thanksgiving instead of just gulping when they start bashing America while enjoying all the fruits thereof. Tell them, you know, you're a hypocrite. You know, it's not easy for me to say this to you, but you're enjoying all the fruits of this country, and you're sitting here debasing it. What's wrong with you? Your mind is poisoned. You know, we can turn this country around, just the millions of listeners to this show, by standing up to these left-wing people who hate the country. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. MichaelSavage.com has all these stories that I am talking about. Kevin, in New Orleans, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, obviously I like your show. I'm listening to it right now. I listen to it every day on the way home. But frankly, sir, you know, you have a lot of information in your show, but you also are just really into fear-mongering. And I'm not afraid of Sean Penn. I'm not afraid of Hugo Chavez or any of these cats. There was always useful idiots. Even back in the so-called greatest generation, they had Walter Duranty and several other people, Joe Kennedy, other people like this, totally appeased dictators. And this country is a lot greater than that, and we're not going to get beat by these people.
Well, I'm missing what you sound rather schizophrenic. You sound like you agree with me, and yet you're saying I'm fear-mongering. Where is the fear-mongering?
Because, well, you're constantly telling me every day to be afraid of the Chinese, be afraid of this person, be afraid of that person. I'm just not, man. I believe in the superiority of the American way. And, you know, we have a lot of things going for us here. And
oh, I see. So you think that just simply believing in the American way is going to protect you when this country is riddled with traitors and spies?
I've been, Michael. We always have been riddled with traitors and spies. They've never been able to defeat us. We've always been dealt with weak bureaucrats.
Well, my friend, now here's where you and I can have an agreement. We've always been able to defeat them, but at what cost, Kevin? Should we wait until Chavez of Venezuela has the nuclear capacity to strangle us? Or should we stop this bullfrog right now?
I don't believe in waiting, but I also, you know...
See, let me explain something. I hate war. Every sane man hates war. Every sane man hates war. But what you do is you strike when your enemy is weak, not when your enemy is strong. And the longer we wait for Ahmadinejad of Iran, and the longer we wait to take out this dictator and bully and psychopath in Venezuela, the worse it's going to be for your children. They're going to be the ones who are going to die saving this country. I'd rather see this done now. Thanks for the call. That's all. But look, you know, I'm starting to feel this is a one-man operation. I'm the last man out. Do you know that? It's like when you leave America, be sure to shut the lights off. Everybody else in talk radio, I'm talking about the top five. Let me level with you. There are a lot of good talk show hosts out there. But on the national level, in the top five, okay, you know who I'm talking about. They're all middle-of-the-road appeasers pretending that they're still wild and far out. They're not. They're playing the middle-of-the-road game, and you know it, and you're on to them. And they know you're on to them, which is why they're starting to justify and bob and weave when you call them. I know that. They're not getting any heat from any of these groups because they've been caponized already. They've been caponized, my friend. But I can only do what I got to do. I'm worried about my children and my children's children. I don't know if this country can go on. And if you say that's fear-mongering, I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong. I've studied history. In some ways, there are parallels to the 1930s. In some ways, there are parallels to the crash of the 1880s or the 1890s. I can find parallels all over the map. There's no single period where there's a direct parallel. There rarely, if ever, is a direct parallel in history. But there's no question in my mind that Ahmadinejad of Iran is the Hitler of our time. He has said the very same things Hitler has said, except he doesn't have the military that Hitler had, nor the brains. Number two, you have a Chavez who was a duplicate, a physical dupe and duplicate of Mussolini. Bumptious, out of control, egomaniacal, thinks he's more powerful than anyone on earth. And I see his end as surely as I'm sitting here on this program. This will not go on. And I'll tell you something. The Saudi Arabians are actually, in the big picture, our friend. Many of you say, well, Wahhabism. Yeah, I know about that. But Chavez called for dumping the U.S. dollar. Chavez called for an oil embargo to strangle America at the latest OPEC meeting. And who was it who stood up to him? It was Saudi Arabia. Believe me, trust me, the power structure of this earth is very fragile but very powerful. It's fragile and powerful at the same time. They're not going to let this blowhard, toxic toad change the world order to his liking and to erect the Hitler of our time, this disgusting, distorted dwarf in elevated shoes. This is one of the most ugly men in the history of modern history, Ahmadinejad. He is perhaps the ugliest man on the world stage. And I don't say that because he's just physically ugly. His soul projects an ugliness through his skin. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I read that Arnold Schwarzenegger has set a California fundraising record and Giuliani's never more record and Obama record and Hillary record. I thought that this country was based upon a democracy where the vote counted, not the dollars. Have we descended to the point where whoever raises more money wins? Is that the kind of degenerate nation that we have inherited or have allowed to be formed in our time? That an election now hinges upon who raises more dollars? Don't you understand what's happening to this country? Don't you see it for what it is? We the people have no voice whatsoever. Whoever throws more money at these front men and women seems to rule the country. And don't tell me it was always that way. It was not always that way. No, it was not always that way. Not at all. Gordon, Monterey, California. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I prophesize that we'll see Chavez swinging from a lamp post, just like Mussolini, in 5 years, and Ahmadinejad will be fried like a rat he is in a bunker. Same time frame.
Well, Gordon, I don't know what to say. I will tell you this. The times, they have changed. You got to understand that Mussolini was hunted down at the end of the war by Italian partisans with the OSS, the American OSS. And the OSS did not have to get permission from a hedge fund operator in Greenwich, Connecticut to hunt them down and kill them. You understand the difference? Today, if we had CIA operatives, which we don't have, apparently, at least that's what we're told, they'd have to get permission from a Wall Street broker before they could hit the kill switch. And this is the frightening part right now. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Forget about it. I'm sick of this whole thing already. I'm just sick of it all. I know what's going on, and I know what has to happen in this country. And you know what I found out last night? I'm not alone. The funny thing is, a lot of the older guys who really were once in the major leagues, who are now retired from them, they see the world the same way I do. The question is whether the people now in place in the agencies see the world the way we do. And I kind of doubt it, to be honest with you. WOR New York City, Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, Thanksgiving 2007,
I want to thank God, the God of Abraham, Moses, and Jesus Christ, for Michael Savage. Michael, one of my favorite TV programs growing up was the George Reeves version of Superman. Michael, thanks for fighting the never-ending battle for truth and justice.
And the American way. Well, I'm not Superman. I'll tell you that right now. Don't confuse me with Superman. You'll have to go to the Leprechaun for that. 1-800-449-8255. It's not about me. Don't you understand? It's about you. It's about the country. There was never a time when we had so many Hollywood idiots pulling together, trying to hate the country and debasing the American people and the American military while pretending to be patriotic. It never occurred before. Yes, there were always leftist tendencies in Hollywood. Actors tend to be left-wing. I understand that. I know the temperament of the artist, and because there's a good portion of myself that's oriented in that kind of, let us say, iconoclastic manner. And we tend to operate, wanting to operate against, you know, structures and systems. But when you have a structure and system that affords you 100% freedom, and that your mind is so whacked out from drugs and left-wing stupidity that you think that you've lost constitutional freedoms when you're free to go to the enemy's country itself and come back and hate the country. You're crazy. You understand what I just said to you? Do you understand what I said to you? It's a natural tendency of artists to want to work against the system, even though they are the system. So they say we've lost constitutional freedoms, yet they're free to travel to Venezuela, Iran, Iraq, wherever, and come back and write anti-American pieces and then claim that like they're martyrs about to be put in a prison camp. Their mind is distorted. Don't you understand? They're mentally ill. Now you say, well, dismiss them. Now, what are you spending so much time on? Because they're very influential. That's why they influence millions of young people into thinking it's true. Every time you see them in a movie, they're smoking a joint. They make the kids think smoking a joint is innocuous. Sort of like having a fresh glass of orange juice. Marijuana is the most dangerous of all drugs. It is a gateway drug. Our enemies in the third world know that, which is why they're flooding the country with drugs. This is akin to the Chinese being addicted to opium by the British. The country is addicted to drugs because they want to weaken the country. We can't take it anymore.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Everybody, welcome aboard the Savage Nation. It's the Thanksgiving Express. We have been talking about how history seems to repeat itself with the appearance on the world stage of a modern-day version of Adolf Hitler and of Benito Mussolini. Only this time we have very useful idiots in Hollywood such as Sean Penn giving Iran's Hitler and Venezuela's Mussolini a pass and yet rushing back to their white picket fence life here in the safety of the United States of America. And so in the honor of Sean Penn, one of the most, in my opinion, disturbed, not disturbing men of our generation, I'd like to play a piece that I wrote a few years ago, produced by myself and David Rubin, about Scungeli's treatment for the Hollywood idiots. Go ahead, please.
This is Graham Hancock on special report from Michael Savage in Hollywood, California, visiting with John Scungeli, the reputed mastermind of the film industry. In a rare interview, Mr. Scungeli has agreed to talk to us about anger management and how he is attempting to get control over the out-of-control, insane liberals ruling Hollywood today. Mr. Scongeli, thank you very much for agreeing to do this interview.
What do you mean agreeing to an interview? Who the hell are you? I didn't agree to anything. What do you mean agree? Who is this guy? How did he get in here?
Mr. Scongeli, I'm Graham Hancock. I'm on special assignment.
There's girls in here. Don't use such dirty words.
I'm sorry, sir, but the Savage Nation is interested to know how you are going to get control over the hippie pinko weirdos here in Hollywood, California.
Oh, that problem. Yeah, we got a big problem. It's killing the business. We had a good thing going here for 80, 70, 80 years. And these nuts, these potheads.
Really?
These perverts, they went nuts here. They ruined a good thing with this attacking the president, attacking the war. You don't know what to do with them.
Mr. Scongeli, we understand that you've initiated a anger management program to help them deal with some of these vitriolic attacks on our military and president. How do you make this anger management program work?
Anger management in my day, anger management came out the barrel of a gun. But those days are over. The only anger manager we had was a Smith & Wesson.
I'm shocked.
A 32. It was the best anger management tool ever invented.
Mr. Scongeli, you're saying that you use guns to control people?
Well, what do you think I'm saying, moron? I gotta spell it out for you.
Well, what other tools did you use, Mr. Scongeli?
Other tools? Truncheons, fists, brass knuckles, meat hooks, car bumpers, whatever. Those days are over. We're talking a long time ago. Now everything's nice and gotta be with the psychology. What we use it today is a special kind of anger management.
I see.
If they like boys, we give them boys in a motel room down in Palm Springs for 5 days in a row. They like girls, we put them in a motel room with the girl 5 days.
Oh.
End of the 5 days, if their anger is subdued, not all. We don't know what to do.
So, Mr. Scongeli, how do you feel about someone like Susan Sarandon, who seems to have complete contempt for the military and our president? How does she still get to be in high-profile movies?
How? Because everyone there thinks the same way she does. Anyone thinks different doesn't work there. That's how. What do you mean how? It ain't hard to figure out. It's all controlled by whack job liberals.
Really?
What do you think, I like him? I don't like him any. You think I like the hookers that I got in my cat houses? I don't like him either. You work with who you have to work with. I'd do a deal with the devil if I had to.
So, Mr. Scongeli, what do you think of someone like Alec Baldwin saying that he was going to leave America if Bush was elected and then staying?
A phony through and through. He plays tough guys. Let me tell you something. He's a fraud. I think he's lighting the loafers, if you know what I mean.
I understand, Mr. Scongeli, that you know Goldie Hawn. Now, what is your take on her?
She had the best keister in the business when I first met her. In the 60s, she had a ass that could turn every head in the restaurant. Today, it's collapsed, so she became a big lefty. The lower the ass, the higher the liberal thing. I don't know where to relate. I don't understand it. What a she had. My own, you couldn't eat when you saw it.
And what about Richard Gere? I understand people are not too fond of him. What do you attribute that to?
One word. Furry creatures.
Now, Mr. Scongeli, what do you think about the actor Dustin Hoffman? I've heard you refer to him as Ratso Rizzo. What do you think about him?
What all these little Jews want to play a gangster for? What, they got a complex? Who they think they are? Bugsy Siegel, every one of them. Every one of them on the 5-5 wants to play a wise guy. What's with them?
How do you feel about the actor Richard Dreyfuss, eh?
Dreyfuss? I think his father ran a seltzer route in Brooklyn. And let me tell you something. The bottle don't fall far from the truck.
I understand that Woody Allen is over in France pandering to them. What do you think about that?
Woody Allen, I think the father ran a bagel store in Brooklyn. And let me tell you something. The bagel don't bounce far from the cart.
Yes, and finally, Mr. Scongeli, what do you think about the actor Tim Robbins, eh?
Tim Robbins, another one. His father owned a candy store in Brooklyn. And let me tell you something. The bar don't fall far from the wrapper.
So, Mr. Scongeli, how do you personally control your anger towards all of these crazy people?
Hey, who gave you the right to ask me anything, you little schmuck? I ain't got no anger. Not anger with me. It's a nature. It's a nature.
I see.
Who the hell do you think you are, you rat bat? You
shocking! So, Mr. Scongeli, in summary, if all of your anger management techniques don't work, what are you going to do?
Teach. That's what we're going to do. Send them to Harvard. They can all take a job teaching at Harvard or Berkeley. Let them go to hell, all of them.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My exclusive interview with John Scongeli from Hollywood, California. Back to you, Michael Savage.
Oh, bravo, David and Michael. That was funny. You know, It's good. It's good. It's good. It's entertaining. It's enlightening. And, of course, if there were fair-minded prizes in the radio world, it would have won one every year in a row. I'm just, you know, I do it for you. I haven't not done a good one with David for a long while. He and I have, like, sort of gone our separate ways. He's there. I'm here. I used to call him in the morning with these ideas. I say, David, I have an idea. I got a character. I've got in my head, John Scungilli. He's, okay, wait, I'll hook you up on the ISDN. And I get into the voice. And then he, blah, 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 you know, and it really worked well. Then he'd fix it and make it work right. I have not done one in a long time because it stresses out my voice. I don't know what it is. Maybe we'll do a few over the next couple of weeks. We'll try to do it again because it's a lot of fun. And we're coming into a good season right now. I feel very strong and I feel very confident that the Savage Nation is actually going to break new records in 2008, despite the enemies of the truth. I believe that we're on the road to break all sorts of new records next year. All right, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. The website is michaelsavage.com. Since I'm not affected by comedy writers, I'm in business. Notice all of the wise guys in television who pretended to be smart aren't on the air. They were nothing but marionettes. The real smart guys are on strike. So they're home in bed smoking marijuana. It's unbelievable to me. Honolulu, Bill, KBZH, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I got my platoon listening to you while we were in Iraq, and it got to the point over the course of deployment where every day before mission, we would all sit down and listen to you, and you would help us more clearly understand what we were fighting for. We want to say
now, Bill, wait, this is amazing. I got to pause here. How did you listen? By what method?
You can stream your audio over the internet.
Wow. So you've heard me support the Marines being falsely accused. You've helped me. You've heard me articulate what you're fighting for and who you're fighting, that kind of thing.
Yes, sir. We've heard you say the military are your heroes. We just want to let you know that you're our hero because you speak for us who have no voice. Thank you.
Oh man, I'm nonplussed. I'm nothing. I can't answer this guy. I have nothing to say. You see what we're talking about here? These guys are over there all alone. They're strung out there. Nobody, well, a few people in radio do. I say nobody. By and large, they've been pushed out and left out, you know, out there. The politicians have abandoned them. Even the Republicans who sent them there aren't supporting them anymore. You noticed? Bush's backpedal and move over to the other side? Yep. So we got to keep up the support. I got to tell you some of the guys I met last night. I wouldn't say ex-Marines because the fellows I know who are Marines say there are no such thing as an ex-Marine. The Marines who were once active, who I met last night, have told me about wonderful charities for wounded soldiers, wounded Marines, for the families of them. And, I mean, I've done what I can with Chesani so far, but I am going to get deeply and more deeply involved in support for all of our fighting men. Every one of them needs our help. If they come home injured, the government does a good job, I understand. But I'm worried about their children. I'm worried about the children's future. They need our help. And we're going to do little by little as much as we can to help you help them. You follow me? San Diego, Carlos, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello. Well, I'm a liberal, and I just wanted to know exactly why the media and people like you, talk show radio hosts like you, always try to put Hollywood actors and actresses down when it's just their opinion. They have points. I mean, if you don't, you know, a lot of
they have points of view, but they consort with the enemy. I mean, you don't see the difference between a conservative opinion, which supports borders, language, culture, and the troops, and the American way, as opposed to Sean Penn, who goes to Chavez, a dictator who has closed down opposition newspapers. You think that's just an opinion?
Well, is Sean Penn the only person you can pick on?
Is he the only one who you don't want to talk about?
Well, I don't really care about that. You know, I mean,
what do you care about? Why is Hollywood suddenly putting out a whole slew of anti-war movies that are failing, by the way? The American people are voting at the ticket box, and they're saying no to the anti-war movies. What does that tell you, Carlos?
Well, you know, maybe they're conservative. Maybe they're
You mean every moviegoer suddenly is a conservative? When did that happen?
No, no. Well,
Carlos, could it be that the Hollywood moguls who hate America, who hate the family structure, who hate the flag, who hate the military, don't understand America at all, Carlos? Is that possible?
Well, okay, being a liberal, I'm about freedom. I'm about privacy laws. I'm about what we can do better as a country. And it's not...
Wait, you're about freedom, but you're against the troops who are fighting Islamo-fascism?
No. Don't get that wrong. I'm a liberal. I support the troops, but I don't support the war. There's a big difference there.
No, I've heard that from the liberals. That's like saying I'm not an anti-Semite. I'm an anti-Zionist. But as Martin Luther King said, make no mistake about it, anyone who says that they're an anti-Zionist is an anti-Semite. It's the same thing with you guys. You can't have it both ways. I'm sorry, my friend. The cat is out of the bag. There's no such thing as supporting the troops or being against the war. You're on the other side of the bar, my friend. If you're against the war, you're against our troops because they're the ones taking the bullets. Have a nice day. I'll be right back. It is the Savage Nation, and we're going to go to Washington, D.C., WTNT. Dino, what's on your mind? Welcome to the program.
Yeah, Professor Savage, your takeoff on Mr. Scungio was fantastic. I loved it. My father used to call me a Scungio when I was a kid. I grew up in an Italian Jewish neighborhood in Washington, D.C. Whenever he got mad at me, he called me a Scungio. And the guy next door, Mr. Weisfield, used to call me what was that word he used for me? He said, He's a gonif.
Oh, that's terrible.
My father
that's
called
terrible.
Me.
So both of them abused you verbally.
Well, I was sort of a delinquent, but I got those terms really hung true. Squingeo.
Well, you know, Dino, you know something? We came from an age when the men lambasted you and tongue-lashed you, and you know what? It made us tougher. Today, they're afraid to say a word. You ever see the kids today? Whatever they do, oh, good. Good job, Johnny. He ties his shoelaces. They want to give him a reward.
Amen. You're exactly right. But anyhow, what main reason I call is I'm going to try to get you beatified because you're the only one I've ever heard on the radio that really said, you know, the Catholic Church doesn't have a spokesman in the world. You're the only one that tells, hey, the Catholic Church is a good organization. They have pedophiles, but they do good things. The Catholic Church doesn't.
Do you know, what does beatification consist of? I'm not certain. I don't understand it. What is beatification? I know that the beatniks thought that they were beatified. I don't think you want me to become an honorary beatnik, do you?
Have you sanctified St. Savage, St. Michael Savage?
Yeah, good luck. You think that the Vatican's going to sanctify me?
Well, you've done more to say good things about the Catholic Church than anybody in the media, bar none.
I have. Yeah, but apparently there are Catholics who are mad at me because I called Cardinal Mahoney a phony for demanding that we legalize millions of illegal aliens. They didn't like me doing that. That was after 13 years of supporting Pius XII and the Catholic Church.
Well,
look, you can't buy everything lock, stock, and barrel, Dino. You have to have, you're bound to have agreements with groups, organizations at some point.
Right, but the Catholic Church doesn't have a spokesman. You are the spokesman of the Catholic Church as far as I'm concerned.
What a responsibility that is. I'll get out my halo, Dino. God bless you and thank you. Good luck in getting me beatified. 1-800-449-8255. So what do you think about the falling dollar? I mean, is that a topic we should talk about here on the Savage Nation? I mean, hello. We've got the bloated toad in Venezuela saying that he wants to crush us. You got the oil people who want to crush us. You got a dollar that's collapsing, but there may be a silver lining to the falling dollar that you may not see immediately. There's a wisdom to it, which is to let the dollar fall because our exports are booming. It's a way to control the out of control trade imbalance, which is make the dollar weaker so the foreigners buy more of our stuff and we buy less of their stuff. I mean, it's a way of really of manipulating our currency. I admit that. It's not a direct method of manipulating our currency, and I don't claim to be an expert in economics, but I do see that, and I haven't read that anywhere, but I think it may be the government's attempt to stop the trade imbalance, the bleeding, and also to, let's say, cause a surge in our products, the creation of our products and the sale of our products overseas. I really do think that it's a definite plan, and it's not such a bad idea to let the currency become a little weaker in that sense. And I think our enemies are underestimating the wasps who run the country. I really do. They always have and they always will. They always think that the country is run by, well, charlatans and weaklings. And it's easy to assume that. And I've been at times suckered into believing that too. But at the end of the day, the Yankee somehow comes out on top. Remember the Japanese in the 80s? We all thought they were going to take over the world. Well, they're not collapsed, but they didn't take over the world. China's the same today on a bigger scale. It is the Savage Nation. Those of you who follow the show closely may recall that last Friday I had a call out of the blue from a man who described himself as a palm reader. And you say, well, come on. And he said, Michael, don't you remember me? I read your palm when you were a local talk show host and I predicted you'd be a national host and a best-selling author. Well, I spoke with Vernon the Palmist over the weekend. Vernon, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, how are you, doctor?
Now, Vernon, you called the show and you predicted without knowing that I was going to. What did you actually say Thursday that I said you must be psychic?
Well, I said that you are going to be forming some type of organization or you're in the process of forming some type of cooperative organization and you're going to try to impact and influence the society with conservative values with some key players. And,
right. Then I said, you must be psychic because I put together a small dinner of important local people here in the conservative area. And I said, how did you know that? And then we talked over the weekend and I asked you to come on the show, which I rarely, if ever, do. And I asked you, what else do you foresee? And you said some things that were amazing, Vernon. And if you care to do so now, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. So while I'm talking to you about this, feel free to give me comments or feedback. And I'm going to, half of this is about your life purpose, and half of this is what I see in the future. Okay? So a lot of this runs across part of your life plan, and the stuff I'm going to talk about with you now is going to increase further and further. So this is the future, in a sense. You're here to express a message, Doctor. I want you to understand that if you boldly deliver your message, but remain unattached or detached from the results, that's your key. You should see yourself as the inspirational communicator, and this will increase through the years, actually. And
Let's pause. You said I'm an inspirational communicator. That's an interesting choice of words. I think they're self-evident, or do you care to elucidate further?
Yes, definitely. You're a healer. Now, you're not a healer like an astrologer or a palmist or a doctor or a nurse, although you are a doctor. But you're a healer through communications, and your life purpose is actually to inspire the masses. And why you're the healer further, more on the point, is that you enjoy giving people insight. You always have loved to learn something and give people understanding about that topic. No matter what that topic was, no matter where you were in your life, no matter how old you were, your happiness, your fulfillment is making people aware of a particular point. So in that respect, you're a healer through communications. And your greatest impact is when you lead by ideas and opinions. Another point I could make is that you actually, and these are interesting words, you're here to stimulate and excite people or excite others to integrate your ideas into their own lives and then later on into the greater society. Dr. Savage, the idea here is that you're kind of like the observer on the outside who changes things on the inside simply by communication.
And well, let's pause for a minute. But as we spoke, you told me something I already knew, that I'm not actually a leader. I'm an idea leader, but I'm not a leader of a revolution or of a movement, am I?
Yeah, let me explain. Yeah. I want you to understand that as you lead by ideas, and I want you to be as autonomous from power and control as possible. You don't lead by positions of power or being a boss or managing or supervising or having to give orders.
That's 100% right. I have absolutely no desire nor any ability to do so.
Like I told you on the phone, I would love, and so many millions of Americans would love for you to be the president of the United States. But being very honest with you, as a Palmist, I'd have to say to you, your greatest strength lies with what I'm talking about. In other words, you have always been successful when you have carved out your own niche and done your own thing, so to speak. And you've always been successful when you have pursued new avenues or situations. Or when you feel the inspiration, not just because the situation already exists in society or needs to be fulfilled. So,
let's pause for a minute. We met only briefly at a radio event when I was a local talk show host. And how did you see my palm? Did I give you a copy of it or what?
No, I looked at it. It's in my data bank in my brain. But at the same time, I listen to you a lot on the radio. And I'm, in a sense, clairsentient. Clairaudient. I'm sorry. As I hear voices or people, I get intuitions, I get impressions, I get psychic stuff. So, for instance, when I called you up the other day, I was actually listening to you, and I got that psychic impression, and I had a call.
Let me say this: many religious people don't believe in divination. In fact, divination is banned according to the Jewish Bible and the Christian Bible. It's considered almost witchcraft. Do you have any feelings about that?
I absolutely do. Christ himself was an astrologer. The three wise men who were searching for Christ were astrologers. When I lived in New York, I would always be consulted by Hasidic Jews. The planets, the difference between an astrologer ultimately and an astrologer is that the astrologer understands that these planets have influence over human nature and character. And in up until 2000 years ago, the astronomer and the astrologer were the same type of person. They both believed that these planets were put up there by God.
Well, before we get into the details, and I don't mean to cut you off, isn't it true that Ronald Reagan and Nancy Reagan used astrologers?
Absolutely. And, Doctor, you would be surprised of how many heads of state, how many politicians, how many premiers. Let me just tell you, they all, anybody in power or position in this society, in any country in the world, uses astrologers, uses psychics, uses palmists.
You mean, but they may not admit it. Are you yourself, in addition to being an astrologer, in any way a religious person?
I grew up a Roman Catholic, and I follow the Vedic point of view. I worship also Radha and Krishna. So
all right. So we have Leviticus. We have Leviticus 19, clause 26, which says, "Ye shall not eat with the blood; neither shall ye practice divination nor soothsaying." What does that mean?
Okay. Well, the Bible also says that one's fortune and one's character is written in the hands. The Vedas, the Indian Vedas of the Indian subcontinent, say very clearly that a dhira is a Sanskrit word that means self-controlled. A dhira gets astrology done for their dependents so that they can properly ascertain their talents, their life purpose, their abilities, their potentials, etc. So astrology has always been practiced. Palmistry has always been practiced in society for thousands and thousands of years. It's only recently that it has, in a sense, fallen into the wrong hand or in bad...
Interesting. Vernon, I want to go back to Leviticus, which is one of my favorite books of the... of the Jewish Testament. I want to carry this one. Listen to this. You shall not practice divination or soothsaying, but the next one is amazing. You shall not round the corners of your heads, neither shalt thou mar the corners of thy beard, which is why Orthodox Jews And for that matter, fundamentalist Muslims do not shave their beards. Isn't that true?
I don't know anything about the Muslim religion.
Okay. It says, you shall not make any cuttings in your flesh for the dead, nor imprint any marks upon you, meaning no tattoos. Isn't that what that means?
I would think so.
All right. Wait.
I'm not a big
I am the Lord. Profane not thy daughter to make her a harlot, lest the land fall into harlotry and the land become full of lewdness. Oh, boy, is that a good one. Ye shall keep my Sabbaths in reverence, my sanctuary. I am the Lord. But now, without going there, the Holy Scriptures, I want to go back to the divination, because you said a few things when we spoke, when I called you Saturday, that were amazing to me. The main thing was, you know, I've had a push-pull with this running for office, whether it be one or the other, leaving radio. I have actually thought about it. Now, I have 28 million people who've taken the time to vote on my site and say, go, baby, go. And yet, on the other hand, I'm not that kind of guy. I could never run for office. It's not in my nature, and you know that.
Yes. Well, let me say to you this. See yourself as a crusader. You know, ride your white horse with the sword in your hand and speak your message and be detached from the outcome. And I just think all success in this society, all results and all fulfillment will come to you. Rise. I wrote here also, rise above your tomato fears, doctor.
Wait, rise above what?
Your tomato fears. And I want to talk.
Did you say your? I'm not trying to be. Did you say your tomato fears?
Tomato fears. Yes. When you
tomato. As in the fruit, as in the vegetable tomato?
Yeah, yes. In other words, don't worry about criticism. Don't worry about being ridiculed or ignored or rejected. Don't worry about being disapproved.
That's a big one. That is a big one. All people who are entertainers or educators or in any way in the public eye have a very, very deep-seated desire to be approved of. You know that, and they could deny it all they want. Some have thicker skins than others, but I've done this alone for 14 years, and you know the slings and arrows of outrageous lies do start to get to you.
Your specific life purpose, doctor, is that you need to be experimental, and you almost have to live life without a safety net. You have to stand up to peer pressure, and in that way, I'm saying don't worry about any tomato fears, because actually, for your specific life plan, bad news about you will always give you more approval and appreciation and applause. Acceptance. Never worry.
So I should thank the haters from CAIR. They're actually building my show.
They're actually giving you approval and appreciation. They're making you.
In other words, because most Americans know that CAR, the Council on American Islamic Relations, is a terror front group. Most Americans fear that, and actually know the history of the group. That some of them were in fact indicted co-conspirators with such questionable groups, and yet they have the audacity to attack me, a Native American with a voice of America like this, and get away with it, going after my advertisers? So you're saying they're actually doing me a favor?
Doctor, not only that, they cannot stop you. Your chart, your hand, your my prediction, whatever you want to, however you want to look at it or call it, it says to me that they cannot stop you.
Well, I want to say this. They're trying to compare me with the IMUS. They're trying to build into a bigger thing. What they don't know is that things are going on behind the scenes that are going to see me 5 to 10 times larger than I am right now within the next year. If things come out the way I see them going, they don't even understand what they're playing with here.
Well, I would have to agree. I think your stock's going to rise even greater, even stronger. I think you're
going to
have more.
I just care about America. I really don't care about the front groups or those who try to attack me. I care only about this country, borders, language, culture. Vernon, I want to thank you, and I want to give you something as a token. I mean, the gifts mean nothing. Can I please send you a complimentary copy of my would you prefer the DVD, the Freedom of Speech Award, or would you prefer the Political Zoo, Vernon? What can I send you?
I would like the Political Zoo, and I would like a hat.
Good. When a person knows what they want, we're halfway there. You're getting the Political Zoo and a free hat. Now, Vernon, I never do this. What if people want you to read their palm? How do they reach you?
Palmistryinstitute.com.
That's it? PalmistryInstitute.com. Go for it. I wish you the greatest success, Vernon. Now, stay in the line, guys, and get Vernon's email. Send it to you-know-who, who'll send it on to you-know-who, and we'll send him you-know-what. I'll be right back. Sanctuary, I am the Lord. Turn ye not into the ghosts, unto the ghosts, nor unto familiar spirits. Seek them not out to be defiled by them. I am the Lord your God. This is good stuff. This is really interesting stuff. Now, this was written for Morris the Butcher, the next one in Leviticus. It says, just balance, just weights, a just ephah and a just hin shall ye have. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Go tell that to Morris with the heavy finger on the scale. KNEW, San Francisco. Jim, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Dr. Savage, good evening. I have a PhD in philosophy, and I have 2 years of Near Eastern studies from your alma mater, UC Berkeley.
Great. Thank God, at last. So what are you calling about?
The forms of divination that are forbidden in Leviticus date back to the earliest Sumerian historical records, and were forms of divination for at least 2,000 years, and are tried and proven, so to speak, in that they stuck around for so long. In fact, your last quote about the weights and measures is from the Code of Hammurabi, a Babylonian king.
So let me see if I understand what you're saying. When the new religion of Judaism came along, it tried to cut off connections to the Sumerian ways? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, essentially. Although many of the stories that are in the historical Bible have roots in the Sumerian tradition, the Jewish people have the genius to add a moral character to them. And to distinguish the Jewish people from others in the Mesopotamian region, they came up with some of the forbidding forms of divination, etc., that are recited in Leviticus, as you've stated.
So why would they then say, it's all in one sentence, this is the part that amazes me, it says, you shall not eat with the blood, neither shall you practice divination nor soothsaying. Why would that be all in one sentence?
As to the blood part, I am not that familiar. As to the divination and soothsaying, they were the dominant means of predicting the future for your average everyday Sumerian, from farm worker all the way up to the king of Sumer.
Well, you know, I'm going to take a stab in the dark on the blood and the soothsaying in the sense, I mean, we're just thinking out loud. I'm not at all a biblical scholar. I would suspect that there was some type of divination based upon blood, meaning blood of animals used in soothsaying. And the Jewish, the ancient Jewish people wanted to cut off that type of divination. And one could possibly argue that they meant that that type of divination per se was banned, not all types of divination, meaning using blood, because they're all in the same sentence. I mean, it doesn't seem to be generalized. It seems to be quite specific. Thou shalt not eat with the blood, neither shall you practice divination, nor soothsaying is all in one sentence. They could be arguing that it's the blood type of divination or soothsaying that is banned. I don't really know.
Yes, in fact, the reading of liver omens, expectancy, is an ancient form of divination used by the Sumerians and other people in Mesopotamia.
Oh, my God, liver omens. My mother used to make me eat chopped liver. Do you think that's where it came from?
Well, I don't think that's where it came
I'm
from.
I'm sorry. I couldn't resist becoming comedic in the historic arena for 1 second because I realized that you're a good-natured person. You are an expert in this field. I am not. I'm simply a man who stumbles around in the Bible and once in a while finds stuff that relates to the political times we're living in. You yourself, are you a religious man, Jim?
Yes, I very much am. And very much.
Do you think, will we survive? Will this nation survive what we're going through?
God willing, and a movement towards the mystical and the religious, we will.
Yeah, that's exactly my feeling. Only a returning to God can save America. And on that note, I'll take a quick break, but I will be back right here on the Savage Nation to take all of your calls. Visit me at michaelsavage.com.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It's twilight time. Out of the mist, your voice is calling. 'Tis twilight time.
It's starting to get crowded up there. A Chinese satellite went into lunar orbit this month, a Japanese probe a few weeks before. And next year, the Indians and the Americans will join them. The Europeans reached the moon last year, crashing an unmanned probe into the surface. Helium-3 was discovered by the Apollo astronauts, and it's estimated there's up to 2 million tons on the moon and virtually none on Earth.
One shuttle load of helium-3, for example, could power the entire United States for 6 months. Two shuttle loads for a year.
So we're looking for rare elements on the moon. Helium-3, isn't that interesting? Could power the entire United States for 6 months. Well, there just may be a surprise in store for our dear friends with the cloaks over their heads and the oil spigot dictatorship down in South America. It could be that helium-3 could come along just when we need it, and they'll be stuck with a pile of sand. Stranger things have happened in history, and of course the world can rotate in another direction virtually on the spur of the moment, so we don't know what's coming. The only good news right now is that with the comedy writers on strike, the American IQ may go up a few points. And now I read that CBS news writers are authorizing a strike to be in solidarity with the comedy writers, which again is good news, because our hope is that with the comedy writers out and with the major news network writers out, the American people might actually be able to see clearly for a few days. At least I hope so anyway. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. It is the Savage Nation. Please play Heavenly Shades of Night of Falling. It's twilight time for a moment as I catch my breath.
When the curtains mark the end of day, I'll hear you, my dear, at twilight time. Deepening shadows gather splendor as day is done. Fingers of night will soon surrender the setting sun.
As the cloak of evening descends across America, of course on the East Coast it descended hours ago. It's descending here. It's descending here on the West Coast. All right, thanks, guys. I'll see them later. So it's a long, long, long day's journey in tonight for me on the Savage Nation. It always has been. That's why I loved Eugene O'Neill's play by the same name when I first read it at age 18, Long Day's Journey in Tonight. It immediately struck me as ingenious. Of course, it was. I don't know that we have writers of that caliber anymore, but we certainly have others in other fields who are still plugging away. I had no idea helium-3 was discovered by the Apollo astronauts. I had no idea there were 2 million tons of helium-3 on the moon and none on the Earth. I had no idea that helium-3 is a non-radioactive isotope, which if it was fused with helium, we could create nuclear power, or nuclear power could be created without nuclear waste. Of course, then the environmentalists would say we're contaminating the moon simply by gathering helium-3. And that's why we have to stop listening to these left-wing loony birds, because they'll kill us all. Let's go to the callers, 1-800-449-8255, Los Angeles. David, 830 on the dial. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes,
I'd like
sir.
To talk about the dollar and the trade deficit with China.
Quickly, please.
The dollar is falling, but the Chinese fixed their currency to the dollar. So the trade deficit is not affected by that. That's the problem with China. They're not allowing their currency to float. They're cheating, basically, on the international idea of letting your currency float.
Well, that I've known for years. There's been an attempt to pressure the Chinese to revalue their currency, to make it a little more expensive, to stop flooding us with their cheap imports. And, of course, we've offered them a carrot and a carrot rather than a carrot and a stick. That's the sad story of our administration. The same with Iran. We offered them a carrot and a carrot, not a carrot and a stick, which is why Ahmadinejad is racing towards a nuclear weapon. I understand all of that. Thanks for the call. What can I do about it? I'm a guy here, one man's opinion, sitting here on the third floor looking down at the world, sitting here on my windowsill with a cushion under my left arm, so to speak. It's a metaphor. In the undershirt, watching the world go by. There's nothing I can do about it. All I can do is witness history, be a witness to history and an observer of history. I can't really change it. I really can't. We have an administration that talks tough but frankly offers a carrot or a carrot. And that's been the problem from the beginning. Bush started out well. He started out with a carrot and a stick, and somehow the stick got broken over his own knee. And now all we've got are carrots to everyone, and that's the problem. And that is the problem that we're all seeing there. The phone number is irrelevant. Hitler and Mussolini are returning to Earth. They're in the form of Ahmadinejad and Chavez, and the media glorifies them daily. I was stunned Saturday morning to open Pinky Sulzberger's New York Times and see a glorification of the Mussolini of our time, Chavez, as though he is a great man, when in fact he stands for everything the liberals hate. Closing down dissenting newspapers, closing down dissenting television stations, arresting opposition, having his thugs shoot children, protesters in the streets, and not showing it. Everything the illegitimate left says they're against this man stands for, and yet they hold him up on a pedestal. There's only one answer to that. And that answer is liberalism is a mental disorder. It's the answer to all of your questions, because many of you puzzle over this. You say, well, many liberals have children, and yet they refuse to crack down on junkies. Junkies are shooting up in the parks around America, particularly in San Francisco's Golden Gate Park. They're leaving hypodermic needles in the parks. Some children have gone down slides and been stuck by used hypodermic needles. You would say, well, wouldn't any parent, liberal or conservative, want the police to clean up the bums in the street and get the homeless junkies off the street? Yes, but if they're liberal, they have a mental disorder. They put their doxy of don't attack the homeless. Homelessness is a disease of capitalism. Everyone deserves a home. They put their doxy above their survival, and their children suffer. Up next, Brian Rooney to give you the latest on poor old Lieutenant Colonel Chesani. God in heaven, why he's being persecuted like this, only Jesus knows. Here's one of the best men you could ever read about, and George Bush will not stop persecuting him. And make no mistake about it, George Bush is the commander-in-chief. He could break this off at any moment, and yet they want Chesani to burn for something he did not do. You're not going to believe what you're about to hear.
Savage.
I'm here with Brian Rooney of the Thomas More Law Center. You know, Brian is here to give us an update in the case against Lieutenant Colonel Chesani, who I've been supporting and you've been supporting. Brian, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you for having me on again. It's always great to be on the Savage Nation.
Brian, tell us what went on last Friday in Colonel Chesani's case.
Well, Michael, we met with the military judge before the arraignment, and that's quite typical to make sure that everything goes smoothly during the arraignment. And we met with him for about an hour and talked about specific trial dates and motion dates that all the counsel could agree upon, and the military judge agreed that those dates were acceptable to him as well. He's the most senior judge in the circuit out there, someone that I actually know very well, and we're quite pleased to have him. Colonel Folsom's his name. And then we went into the hearing, which is called an arraignment. It's very similar to a civilian court, but it's more perfunctory in the sense that he doesn't plead. He reserves his pleas and form for a later date. So Colonel Chisani just basically stated his name and his rank, and the charges were read in open court. And this basically began the end process in regards to the court-martial. It began the court-martial process, and now we have a roadmap to get to the trial dates.
Please remind us what the charges are against Lieutenant Colonel Chisani and why they decided to carry it this far.
Well, Michael, Lieutenant Colonel Chisani is charged with an orders violation, and underneath that orders violation, he's charged with dereliction of duty for not fully investigating and not fully reporting a possible law of war violation. And what that carries with it is a possible jail term of 2.5 years, a dismissal from the Marine Corps, which is the officer equivalent of a dishonorable discharge, and all loss of all of his retirement benefits. We have a trial date set for the end of April to begin April 28th to last for 2 weeks, and we have 3 motions hearing dates in January, February, and March, where we expect to file many motions to get rid of this case before we even have to get to trial because of all the problems that have occurred in the case on the government side. And we look forward to starting the case and doing what lawyers do, and that's filing motions and making arguments and winning this case.
There were other Marines charged. How have the other cases gone, and what position does it put Chisani in?
There's been 8 other Marines charged, enlisted and officer alike, Michael, and out of the 8 charged, 5 have been exonerated. 2 of them are headed towards the general court-martial. Lieutenant Colonel Chisani's one and another enlisted man, and the jury's still out, so to speak, on the 3rd person. And then, quite interestingly, on Friday, or actually on Saturday of this week, this past week, another lieutenant was put through the Article 32 process, and that wrapped up on Saturday. And the hearing officer in that case said he was anxious to hear the government's written arguments about the charges. He was charged with similar things to Colonel Chisani because he believed that the charges were a stretch. So again, we have another investigating officer who's a lawyer himself saying that these charges are a stretch and, in my opinion, ridiculous. But for some, like Lieutenant Colonel Chisani, the Marine Corps has decided to send them to the general court-martial process in what I believe are, you know, politically charged reasons to cover themselves in regards to anti-war politicians like Congressman Murtha and the media.
Why don't you remind us what Congressman Jack Murtha and Tim McGurk of Time magazine did in this case to undermine our troops?
Michael, this whole thing started with a Time magazine story that labeled these Marines as committing a massacre in Haditha, where they supposedly massacred 24 civilians. Tim McGurk relied upon 2 insurgent sources that we know are known now to be insurgent sources. One spent time at Abu Ghraib as a prisoner. And McGurk relied on these 2 to write a story and defame our Marines, and it happened during the midterm elections. And so, of course, Congressman Murtha got in front of every camera he could find and called these Marines cold-blooded murderers, and the officers are covering it up. And mind you, Congressman Murtha was a Marine himself at one point. There was also other politicians that made comments as well, including Representative Rangel and others, that made similar scurrilous remarks, but Congressman Murtha's were the most scurrilous. And, of course, now that the cases have been dropped against many of the Marines, Congressman Murtha says it's not appropriate for him to comment upon them while the cases are still going on. So it's interesting to see that he couldn't, you know, help to find a camera before when he was, you know, helping his political cause, but now he doesn't want to talk to anybody, especially to say, I'm sorry for accusing these Marines of doing something improper when they acted quite appropriately and heroically.
Is there still a chance of avoiding a full court-martial for Colonel Chisani?
Absolutely, Michael. This thing can be ended at any time by anyone in the chain of command, beginning with the commanding general in charge now. And it's a new commanding general. His name's Lieutenant General Helland, who's a Vietnam veteran, combat experience himself, pilot in the Marine Corps, and he is the one that's looking at the charges now, and he can end these cases anytime he wishes before the general court-martial process, or anybody that outranks him in his chain of command, to include Secretary of the Navy, Defense Secretary, the President himself. If that doesn't happen, then we will file motions to try to end this thing in the motions hearing process. Based upon the vagueness of what Colonel Chisani's charged with, dereliction of duty is a quasi-criminal charge. It doesn't really have a lot of meat behind it. It's usually a charge that you throw up there when you don't have great facts as the prosecutor behind you. And we also believe that if we do have to go to court-martial, we have the luxury and the rare luxury of defending an innocent man. And so the facts aren't against us. They're with us. We're going to be judged in front of a military judge or jury that has combat experience. We're looking forward to presenting all the facts in an open courtroom where people that have experience out in Iraq will judge Colonel Chesani and his 20 years of combat experience for what it's worth. And we believe because we do have an innocent client and the facts are on our side that we're going to exonerate Colonel Chesani. Unfortunately, it's going to take over 2 years to do that, but it's worth it.
How much money is the government pouring into this prosecution?
Well, the Marine Corps came out recently saying they've spent a little bit over $3 million to investigate these cases, but that doesn't take into account all the man hours as far as the 63 NCIS agents they use to try to uncover dirt on these Marines. It doesn't count for the lawyers that are used. So if you add up all the manpower that has been used to try to grill these guys, we've seen reports of upwards of $43 million unofficially. And so the Thomas More Law Center has been collecting donations in a Lieutenant Colonel Chesani defense fund, and we've been able to raise, through your help most specifically and your audience, upwards of $400,000 to $500,000. And we believe that it'll take about $400,000 to $500,000 more to get through the court-martial process, but we're confident we can get there, and even still, we're going to defend Colonel Chesani no matter what the cost.
How can the Savage Nation audience help in the defense of Lieutenant Colonel Chesani?
Well, Michael, there's two things, obviously, you can do. One is the one that your audience has done so well, and that's contribute to the defense fund at www.thomasmore.org, one O and more. And the other is just to keep Colonel Chesani's family in your thoughts and prayers. And you can also write letters to the editor and, let the Marine Corps know how you feel about this. And there's a lot of ex-Marines out there, or former Marines, and people that love the Marine Corps. And we can let, our constituents or our congressmen and congresspeople know that we're dissatisfied with this, that you can't hold Marines accountable for insurgent propaganda. What we should be doing is celebrating these heroic acts of these Marines and not putting them in front of criminal court-martials for doing their duty in a foreign land against the most vile enemy this country's ever faced.
Brian Rooney, thanks again for the update.
Michael, it was great speaking with you. God bless you and your listeners.
Savage.
Watching the debates last week, and I began to get the feeling that no matter what comes out of Hillary's mouth, the Democrats and the media are going to support her for the nomination. There seems to be an air of inevitability that she's trying to project anyway, and the Democrats seem to be buying it. Jeff Kuhner is on the line to talk to us about why this is happening and how it will affect not just the Democrats, but the whole country. Hi, Jeff.
Mike, thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
So, Hillary has repeatedly been portrayed as the inevitable choice for Democratic nomination, but she hasn't been performing very well in the last few debates. Is she herself putting this inevitability factor in jeopardy?
Michael, one of the sort of lead commentaries that we have in this week's issue of InsightMag.com, a sort of Washington Watch, which is a feature that we have every week that sort of looks on the dominant political issues of the week, this time we focus on Hillary, and the point that we make is a point that's now emerging among a lot of circles, both Democrats and Republicans, which is that Hillary has a fundamental flaw. It could be her fatal undoing, which is that she is not likable as a person. If you look at most American presidents, almost absent of ideology, look at somebody like Jimmy Carter versus Gerald Ford in 76, you look at Ronald Reagan versus Jimmy Carter, you look at Bush versus Dukakis in 88, look at even Clinton versus Bush in 92, and look at Bush against Al Gore and John Kerry in 2000 and 2004. All of them were much more likable than their competitors, than their rivals. Americans related to them, thought that they were just nicer people, somebody that they felt was authentically going to uphold some of the values that they felt were most dear and cherished to them, and just overheld the senses that these are ordinary people that we as Americans can relate to. The problem with Hillary is nobody likes her. And the reason why they don't like her, Michael, is because she comes across as somebody who is utterly consumed and obsessed with political power. For example, let me just ask one question to all of your listeners. How many of them know anything about Hillary in terms of her hobbies? Does she have a dog? Does she have a cat? Anything that we know about other previous presidents? The reason why is a very simple one. She has no hobbies, because this is a woman who is utterly consumed with political power. And in the end, this is going to be her fatal undoing. Americans find her strange. They find her creepy. She literally is somebody out of the French Revolution or the Russian Revolution. She's sort of the closest thing we've ever come to in this country to a Vladimir Lenin. For her, power and the pursuit of power is everything. This woman works on Sundays. She works in evenings. She works early in the morning. This woman literally eats, breathes, and drinks how she can get to the White House. And in the end, the Americans feel that there is something just profoundly perverse about that. And so, Michael, I think the one poll to watch is, again and again, you see that over 50% of Americans say they will not vote for her. And that high negative approval rating is going to be her downfall. And, you know, Michael, the thing that I found very bizarre was the charge that somehow she made against Edwards and Obama, that they were going negative because they were highlighting some of the contradictions that she had made on the issue of granting illegal licenses to illegal immigrants. First, in the previous debate, she said she was for it. Then the day after, she said she was against it. Then a couple days later, she said she was for it. Then finally, now, as Spitzer has completely backpedaled from that plan, now she says she's against giving licenses to illegal immigrants. You know, to point out somebody's contradictions, how did that suddenly become negative? How did that suddenly become mudslinging and negative campaigning? It is utterly absurd. And, you know, Michael, what I found absolutely shocking, here they had Hillary on the ropes. Finally, for the first time, the press was beginning to pound her, was beginning to finally take a critical eye, and obviously highlighting and showcasing what everybody here in Washington knows, which is she is all over the map on issues. She is utterly, for her, consumed with political power. She will literally say one thing one day and something else the next day, according to the political winds of the time. She is somebody who is obsessed with triangulating. You don't know where she stands on one issue after another. Is she for the Iraq War? Is she against the Iraq War? Is she for bombing Iran? Is she against bombing Iran? Does she really support universal health care insurance or not? Finally, the media begins to just begin to, on the surface, probe these very fundamental inconsistencies, and suddenly her opponents give her a free pass. She throws out the negative campaigning charge, and Barack Obama and John Edwards with her. And that's what I thought was most pathetic, was just how weak her opponents were. What a fraud John Edwards is, and more importantly, how Barack Obama is just not ready to face down a ruthless political machine like Hillary Clinton. But Michael, I can tell you this. The Republicans in this city are licking their chops at the prospect of taking on Hillary in 2008, because they will run one ad after another showing her flip-flopping, as they did with John Kerry on the issue of giving licenses to illegal immigrants. And so, Michael, I believe that of all the major Democratic candidates, she is the most vulnerable. And what you're seeing now with the Democrats is they are making a deal with the devil. They could have the White House in 2008. It's even most Republicans, off the record, will tell you, 2008 will be a Democratic year. They will increase their gains in the House and the Senate, and more importantly, they believe they have an 80 to 90% chance of winning the White House. The only person that could change that equation is Hillary Clinton. She is the only one that could give Republicans a real chance to win, because she is hated. She is despised by conservatives because they know what a ruthless thug she is, how her and her husband drove this country into the ground in the 1990s. She's not liked by most Americans. She is somebody that a Mitt Romney or a Giuliani or a John McCain could make mincemeat of on the campaign trail. If the Democrats go with Hillary, it will be their undoing. She will lose the White House for the Democrats. So if the Democrats want to go down that road, all power to them. I mean, frankly, the last thing I want for this country is a Hillary presidency. But, Michael, what I am shocked at is the utter stupidity of the Democratic Party. They could win the White House and control both houses of Congress if they just get rid of Hillary and run anybody else. But they're not willing to do that because they're too afraid of the Clinton machine, which has been dominating the Democratic Party for what, the last 10 to 15 years.
One thing that I've noted on many occasions is that a lot of women, and perhaps even most women, don't like Hillary. Why do you think that is, and do you think it plays into this lack of charisma?
Michael, they don't like her for several reasons. I think the biggest issue with her is she's a phony. She's somebody who portrays herself as a feminist. She's somebody who says that she champions women's rights. Yet what has she done throughout her career? She has ridden the coattails of her husband. Nobody would know anything about Hillary Clinton had she not been married to Bill Clinton. So, in other words, just by de facto of being first lady for 8 years, suddenly now she's equipped to lead the greatest nation in the history of the world? And then what does she do when she leaves the White House? She parachutes herself into New York State, the most liberal state in the country, and she runs two lackluster campaigns, and now all of a sudden she's able to stare down Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in Iran or the gangsters that run North Korea, or somehow she's capable of handling the fundamental problems this country faces regarding its borders or Social Security or the upcoming mortgage crisis. It's a joke, and most Americans sense that. She doesn't have the resume. She doesn't have the qualities. She doesn't have the skills and the talents and the experience needed to be not just the leader of America. When you're president of the United States, you're the leader of the free world. I mean, right after the Pope, there is no other more important office, more serious or consequential office than being president of the United States. And so what does she have going for her? She was married to a man who assaulted and raped women while he was president and before he became president. And what did she do? Did she stand up for her rights as a woman? Did she say, no, this is shameful, this is abusive, this is disgraceful, both to me and to the women that you've assaulted? No, she protected him. She aided and enabled him. She helped him to overcome his critics, to blackmail his critics, to intimidate his critics. And so you have women like Juanita Broderick, who no one has been able to disprove, and I completely believe her, and frankly most people in this city believe her, that she was raped, physically raped by Bill Clinton. You have people like Jennifer Flowers. You have people like Paula Jones. You have all these other women that talk about how aggressive Bill Clinton was in terms of harassing women, how he went after women like there was no tomorrow. You have Kathleen Willey coming out with her book saying she was sexually assaulted and groped in the Oval Office by President Clinton. And what did Hillary do? She, along with Clinton's top advisors, went after the victims. They went after those that blew the whistle on Bill Clinton, that basically exposed him for the sexual predator that he is. She went after the victims while now proclaiming herself to be somehow an advocate for women's rights. It is hypocrisy of the highest order. So I think most Americans sense that there's just something profoundly wrong. I mean, what self-respecting woman, just on a basic level, stays with a man who not has one affair, two affairs, hell, 10 affairs, a man who is literally a sexual addict, a man who's had hundreds, if not thousands of affairs, who's groped women, assaulted women, raped women. I mean, who stays with a man like that? What self-respecting woman does that? And so I think most Americans just feel that there's just something psychologically and morally wrong with Hillary Clinton.
And given that we have, in this case, someone who seems to have no moral center, no evident personality, that obviously puts her at a huge disadvantage. But are there those within the Democratic Party who understand this? Regardless of the political infeasibility, are we hearing any dissent from that side of the aisle based on her lack of personality and disregard for morality?
Michael, the dirty secret in Washington is this. Most Democrats despise the Clintons. They will kiss their ring and tell them again and again, you know, how great they are, and they'll give them money because they believe they are invincible. They are convinced in their own mind that it was the Clintons who stared down Newt Gingrich, who broke the Republicans in the 1990s, and they believe that the Clintons could lead them to power again. So it's this aura of invincibility that the Clintons are able to project that has this mesmerizing hold over many Democrats. But privately, when you talk to them, they will tell you they use blackmail, they intimidate people, they are literally gangsters and thugs. They don't like them. And, you know, more importantly, Michael, as liberals, they feel that they have betrayed the liberal movement and the liberal cause on issues from welfare reform to free trade to the Iraq war, as Hillary voted for it. They just don't like the Clintons. But in the end, it is that sense that they are the dominant force, the sort of king and queen of the Democratic Party, that they feel they have to go in there and literally kiss their rings. What you're now seeing for the first time is that this sense of inevitability and invincibility is now fading. The queen has been cut. She can bleed. She's not a god. And now, for the first time, many Democrats are sensing, you know what, she may not be the best candidate for us in 08. If the Clintons lose that sense of dominance and power and inevitability, they will lose support in the Democratic Party overnight because they are not liked. It's not just Republicans that can't stand them. Democrats can't stand them. They have turned everybody off. And that's why they have to project this sense that it's a coronation, that she is the inevitable front runner, that she will be the nominee come hell or high water. Because if they lose that sense of inevitability, she is finished. And more importantly, the Clintons as a power in the Democratic Party are finished.
Well, interesting stuff, Jeff. We'll talk with you soon. Jeff Kuhner.
Michael, it was great talking with you. Thanks very much.
Savage.
The Savage Nation. We've had so many topics today, as usual, on the Savage Nation. I'd like to introduce another one, but I'm not going to go into it. It's the French socialist workers and their strike and the communist socialists trying to cripple France. And what is it that they're striking over? Well, I'm going to look into this a little bit more tomorrow. All Sarkozy wanted done there was to make France a little bit more competitive. And so he said, well, you've got to work a little longer and a little harder. And they went crazy. The railway worker communist movement has tied up the trains. Now tens of thousands of other public sector workers, teachers, nurses, air traffic controllers, postal workers are going to go on strike beginning tomorrow morning over pay claims and job cuts. What is it that they're screaming about? What is it that Sarkozy has wanted? Well, all he wanted was some mild reforms. Mild reforms, mind you, that would make you in America laugh. For example, President Sarkozy of France wants to abolish the right of transport workers to retire after 37 and a half years rather than 40 years like other French workers. They don't want that. You got to remember that early retirement and the 35-hour work week mean that France works less than other nations. They work an average of 617 hours a year per man, woman, and child, according to figures, compared to 800 hours a year in Britain, for example. God only knows what it compares to the United States, where we're the hardest working people on the earth. But it just shows you what happens when you create a socialist welfare state. The people become lazier and lazier and lazier, and they don't care that the country is bankrupt. It is. France is fundamentally a bankrupt nation. And they're living on the fumes of the Napoleonic era. And yet, here a guy comes along, moderate conservative, and says, you got to work a little harder, you got to retire a little later, because we can't afford this anymore. We cannot give you all of these benefits anymore. We don't have the money. Some social benefits need to be cut back. And that's why I say here in America, unless we stop the drift towards socialism, the country is going to be broken over the knee of the Communist Internationale eventually. We've been moving there. We're 50, 60% socialist already. What do I mean by that? I mean welfare. I mean Medicare. I mean every funding proposal that's ever been written and more funded to the hilt. And who's paying for it? You are. That's why the dollar is collapsing. We, too, are bankrupt. Fundamentally, we're bankrupt. Bush has broken the treasury. I've told you before, wars are expensive. In fact, wars are the most expensive folly of any president or any leader. They're extremely expensive. They have to be very carefully thought out. When I was a kid and I walked the streets and I came to understand that a sewer cover in New York City, I'd be walking and looking down at the pavement. And if I saw a sewer cover, I said, wait a minute. One day it dawned on me that somebody had to actually make that sewer cover. A man in a factory and a foundry had to make that sewer cover. You know what I'm saying? They had to get the steel. They had to hire the man. And then I realized everything has a cost. Well, a tank costs money. A bullet costs money. Gasoline costs money. A uniform costs money. A medical kit costs money. Water costs money. This has been going on for five or more years. The war is bankrupting the United States of America. Do you understand that? And that's why the dollar is falling. That's one of the reasons. The war is out of control with costs. And so that's why the people are discontent. They want the war over, and they want it won, not lost. And the longer we stay there and get bled like this, which the enemy knows in the long term is going to destroy us, the worse it is for you, the average American worker. I know it's all too complicated, and I realize that I shouldn't have done this at the end of the show. I'm tired. You're tired. It's late in the day on the East and West Coast. So we'll let it go with that. But the fact of the matter is, we have a falling dollar. We have enemies surrounding us from the South to the Middle East. And I don't know that the machine that runs all of this is capable of protecting us. Let's take a few more callers in the waning moment. No, I don't even have the time for that. I really don't. So I'm going to just play Heavenly Shades of Night Are Falling. It's twilight time on the way out the door. And then we're going to go to the train. Let's hear Heavenly Shades and then the train. And then we have Are Falling.
It's twilight time. Out of the mist, your voice is calling.
All right, I think what I'll do is this. Turn it off. I think now that the show is over, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go home, have a beer, make spaghetti, put some olive oil on some delicious French bread, because the French are in trouble. I'm going to eat French bread tonight. Put it in the oven, put some garlic on it. And that's it. I mean, you got to understand, you got to take it a day at a time, right? One day at a time. One day at a time is what it takes. And until tomorrow, with God's will and your listenership, we'll now hear the train sounds on the Savage Nation. And oh, yes, a few more days on that sale and it's over. Because we're going to be out of stock. Get it now. 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 Brown cow. Get it now. Get it now. MichaelSavage.com.